I just want to say a quick thanks to everyone who has left a podcast review so far. It's been fantastic to see what you guys are making of the podcast and really enjoy reading them. Rest assured, I do read every single one. So thanks again. And if you haven't left a review yet, it would do us a massive favor if you would, as that would help us grow this community and reach more grassroots coaches who will benefit from these conversations. So thanks again, and we really appreciate it. Welcome to the Athletic Evolution Podcast. Today, I'm speaking with Wendy Ryan Glover. Wendy is a health and physical education teacher and coach. She's dedicated her 22-plus year career to approaching teen athletes as future contributors to sport through education, community involvement, and mentorship. She's written health and wellness and sport and management courses for the Ontario Ministry of Education and many programs to support the holistic development of athletes. Wendy wanted to improve the sport community experience for all. This led her to creating an innovative athlete leadership program to recruit and train teen athletes to be future coaches in the province of Ontario. Through this program, athletes gain many industry certifications and dozens of volunteer community service hours in areas of sport individualized for them. Over 400 athletes have been through this program and have been empowered to contribute to sport in Canada. So welcome to the podcast, Wendy. It's a pleasure to have you today.
Thank you for having me, Rob. I'm excited to have a talk.
Yeah, I'm really excited to talk about everything you've been doing in the athlete leadership program and everything there. So for people who haven't come across you before, give us a bit of background in terms of how you got involved in sport as a child and how that's evolved over time to what you're doing today.
Well, as a child, I was lucky enough to live where my backyard backed onto a local school. And I also lived at the end of a street of a community center. So I spent the majority of my youth playing at the schoolyard and at the community center in swimming lessons and gymnastics and as many sports as I could possibly do, as well as in elementary school, I played a lot of non-competitive sports, basketball, volleyball, soccer, track and field, cross country, as many things as I could possibly join, including some strange, untraditional sports such as water polo. I tried synchronized swimming. My parents were more than happy to sign me up for things that would get me out of the house and keep me busy. So I really didn't start any competitive sports until high school. And that was mostly due to pressure from friends I was playing high school sports with. And I quite enjoyed playing competitive soccer, basketball, and dabbled in track and field.
Brilliant. And so what was the transition for you going from being an athlete to getting more involved in the teaching and coaching side of things?
So when I was around 15, 16 years old, when I went to high school, our high school was in the downtown of the city. So we were actually a block away from a YMCA. So I ended up working there through high school and becoming a lifeguard, teaching swimming lessons and coaching, and quite enjoyed working there from about 16 to 22 years old while I went to university as well. For kinesiology and human development. And I think that was the foundation for why I wanted to coach, is those so many years of working with kids. And it wasn't a competitive setting at all, but I was also dabbling in community sport, helping out, you know, my cousin's team or the odd little team as a little assistant coach. And it brought me a lot of joy and led to my postgraduate teaching education program. And then I became certified to teach K to 12 phys ed. And I think it all stems from being involved in sport and in community all along the way.
So it's clear to me, reading around the athleteship program and what you've done, that you've got quite a big driver there to get that up and running, because, you know, there's significant things in terms of getting people to buy in and see the benefits of the potential program. So what is it that you would say, you know, outside of that kind of initial joy, is that underlying driver to get something like this up and running for what you're doing?
Well, we actually had at my high school an environment program that kind of gave me the idea at first. So they learn about environmental concepts and then they spend an entire semester traveling all over the province trying to solve problems with the environment. So I said, well, why aren't we doing that for sport? I was teaching at this high school, as I said, that was downtown in our city. I actually teach at the high school that I went to, and I knew I had access to things all over our city. Our city has around 400,000 people. And I had already taught elementary school phys ed, K to 8 phys ed, and now I was teaching 9th through 12th phys ed. I had already coached a lot for a few years. I was in my early 30s. And my children were about 5 and 7 when I was around 35. And I was observing two things happening. One, their sport experiences weren't really age appropriate in some cases, the way they were being coached or the environment they were in. And we're talking at 5 and 7 years old. So I was like, what's going on here? These are little kids and people aren't treating it the way it should be. And then what was happening at work was I was teaching leadership courses in kinesiology for grade 11, 12s, and they were dropping out of sport and communicating why they weren't enjoying it at that point. So I was trying to blend those two worlds of like, well, a common theme is I'm seeing coaching as a common theme where there's some place here where we can make a difference. So in my mind, I blended the worlds together of, well, let's improve youth sport. It will actually improve these teenagers' experiences in youth sport or any children's experiences in youth sport. And instead of exiting sport and not going back for 10 or 15 years when kids are 15, 16, 17, let's keep them involved in a way that is a new initiative. So an example would be a common example is they just don't have time to fit in such a high level of competitive sport anymore. They're not as interested in training. So instead of completely leaving, say, rugby, they would choose to coach once a week, volunteer with an organization, maybe play, I guess what you would call more adult league style of one game a week with their buddies. And so I was transitioning. My idea was to transition athletes to go through sport in the way that matched them individually, which is clearly, as you would know, very different for every single person. So it all kind of came together about 11, 12 years ago, where I wanted to write this program and serve athletes in our community, as well as serve the community because they're giving back. So that's kind of how the initial plan started. Mm.
So, I mean, it seems obviously they're quite a big, quite a clear kind of, I guess, thought process around that. But I'm assuming that that's based, obviously, you highlighted the kind of maybe negative experiences that you're seeing. But I'm guessing that contrasts with some quite positive experiences that you've had in your own kind of history as an athlete that may have shaped your own coaching practice. So is there anything that stands out to you in your journey that are like, that's the sort of thing I want to replicate, or that's experience that I want to replicate?
100%. So I don't want to, my issue with the coaching scenario is I'm never trying to put coaches down because then we don't have any coaches. So that's not the issue. The issue is how do we just help everybody get better? And when I reflect on my experiences, I've played a lot of sports for a lot of years, and I actually had the most amazing coaching experiences along the way. I didn't always have the most technical or tactical coaches, depending on the year, the sport. As I aged, I played university soccer and I ran provincial track and field. I've had plenty of experiences in high school sport and club. They were just really good people. So I think that resonated with me is you don't have, like the kids that we certify to coach, they're not always the most tactical or technical type of future coaches. They're literally good people who want to give back to sport and they want to help kids. And I'm really lucky that I actually can't think of a single coach I grew up with that I didn't enjoy. And I don't know, I don't hear that as much anymore from kids. They're a little bit more frustrated. And I think that maybe, which you've touched on in other podcasts, is the professionalization of some youth sport experiences. And and kids starting competitive sports so young as well, so they're influenced younger. Whereas I didn't start competitive sport at all till 10th grade. So I was fairly able to just go through my youth and love it and play what I played and enjoyed it for what it was. And I lucky enough had wonderful coaches. So I wanted to pass that on to the children and teens and young adults that I mentor, is you want to be a good person to these kids first and foremost. And we can worry about the technical and the tactical stuff as you get a little older and as you get experience in the sport. But first and foremost, you want those kids to come back and you want them to see you as an ally and someone that they enjoy seeing every week.
I think I know, you know, the theme that's going to come out in this next question. So what would you say is your kind of principles that guide your coaching practice? If you were to kind of sum up maybe your philosophy, what are the things that are really important to you?
Well, one is servant leadership. So why are you there? So you have to put the kids first and their needs first. The win-loss record has become, especially in competitive sport, such a measuring tool for whether a coach is good or not. And I think that pressure comes from either community or a parents, but it's not appropriate. So the other is that you're an ally to the kids. So the way you speak to them, the way you conduct yourself around them needs to be in a role model example, and a way that you're proud of your language, you're proud of how you're communicating with kids and families and representing a club or your school or yourself or your family well. That's first and foremost, is that you're good people. And as I said, the technical and tactical stuff, that can come later. Some kids are already exceptionally technically skilled and they're lucky, but others, it's just part of the learning process. So being a lifelong learner, a servant leader, being humble, willing to improve and learn every year that you're involved. Like I've been coaching, I don't know, I'm going to say probably 30 years, and I'm still feeling like I haven't learned near enough. And that has to be the undertones, is that we're lifelong learners at whatever we're doing.
Definitely. No, it's there's really nuggets of gold in there, I think, for everyone. So let's dig into a bit more around what you do day to day. So tell us a bit around your current role and give us a bit of a picture of what that looks like for you in a normal day, outside of a worldwide pandemic.
Yes. Well, normally, so these kids apply to the program in 10th grade and we serve our entire city. When I first started, I was kind of begging 14, 15 kids to start. Now we allow 60 in per year. So we've had over 400 through the program. And if we could have more staff, it would be bigger. Many schools have tried to follow this model in our city. And it is a little bit difficult to manage the in its entirety. But what we do is kids, once they start in 10th grade, the second half of 10th grade, we start planning their courses through high school. We help plan their athletic development. We kind of put them in contact with registered dietitians if they need it, strength and conditioning coaches if they need that, skills coaches, academic counseling, and we start their path in 11th grade officially by teaching them throughout the school day. So they take courses, which we call here co-op, which is half their school day is a work school to work course. So that's where we're in the community. So we visit strength and conditioning facilities. We visit hot yoga studios. We run charity events. We run tournaments for elementary schools. We go to 12 elementary schools in our city and help facilitate intramurals, coach, officiate, help with running gym classes. So because we have this one step, one foot in the community and then one foot in high school, we're able to build their resume all through 11th and 12th grade. So in addition to that workplace class, we also have two specialized courses that I wrote that are Ontario government approved. So in grade 11, we have sport communication and entrepreneurship. And in 12th grade, they have sport management. And most of them take two or three of these classes, additionally kinesiology in grade 12, where they can learn the content behind the coaching theories and digital literacy and running sports businesses, all kinds of things that we are able to offer through the school day. And of course, we've partnered with national governing bodies and sport organizations in order to facilitate their accreditation and volunteering.
Sounds phenomenal. I mean, that, like, I'm thinking if I was 15, 16 years old and come across that, I would have been all in, with jumped in with both feet. So it sounds like a fantastic opportunity for a lot of these guys and girls to get involved in. So what was the catalyst to getting this up and off the ground? Like, obviously you mentioned having a bit of a thought process around why isn't there for sport, but I think we're all realists to know that there's a big gap between an idea and it being achieved in reality. So what Absolutely. Did that look like, that process for you?
Well, at first I was trying to plan a program for elite athletes only. That was my main concept, is the kids, what are they missing that they're not getting at 15 that they should have had at 15? So they're exiting high school at 18. And I was like, well, how do I help these kids? So one clear example, if you're thinking back 15 years ago, how many girls were strength and conditioning, like training? So I couldn't talk these kids, these girls, and they couldn't do any push-ups. Like, I was like, because I grew up in gymnastics, so there was such a foundation for being strong that a lot of these girls, I could tell that was one of the things they were missing. And so I'm like, well, how do I help them get into these things besides being a random teacher that goes around telling kids you should do this and you should do that? So then once the program started, I realized that not that many kids are actually elite athletes. So they may want to be, or their families may think they are, or they may think they are because they're teens. And so then I thought, well, that was too exclusive. So why don't we open it up to just kids who are athletic and kids who love sports, movement, fitness, etc. So then it grew quite quickly to become more of a holistic program. So there's so many good kids in our school that loved sports and tried so hard and trained, they just didn't get very good at them. So I wanted to be a catalyst for them to feel as important. And how can you contribute to sport? Just because you can't play sport past high school at a high level doesn't mean you can't contribute to sport in such an amazing way. So it was kind of, it established itself from my initial concept to, well, let's get these kids' resumes so amazing that when they leave high school, they can really go into all kinds of fields in sport management or health and wellness or sports science. And they have. So now that I've been at it over 10 years, I've seen where some of them have ended up, and it's absolutely what I imagined it to be 10 years ago, from kids completing masters in positive youth development, to working with provincial governing bodies, national governing bodies, all sorts of things like that. So it's been really rewarding to know that the idea paid off, I guess.
That's fantastic. It's a really valid point you make there. Like, obviously there's a lot of programs that are created with the elite athlete in mind, but actually there's kind of that, I guess, the flip side to that, which is a lot of people who don't make that elite level then either diminish their involvement entirely or very significantly, mm-hmm. and walk away and maybe don't know, okay, I love this thing, I'm now not good enough to go to the next level, so what is my next step? And actually, maybe those, it's not as obvious to people that, you know, there's opportunities in getting involved in being an official or being a development coach or being, right. You know, there's other things that, you know, everyone who had their eyes set on being, you know, that NBA star and doesn't make it, well, what's my next thing? And I guess, especially when so many people have their identity wrapped up in being an athlete, it's far more similar to sidestep into these other directions, but maybe it's not as obvious to people that there's those opportunities.
So, well, I've definitely noticed that the using teens as the target market it's actually phenomenal. They're not afraid of adults really at this age. They're like an adult who's 35 years old and starts, you know, coaching U6 soccer may feel pressure from other parents, other coaches. It's adult in an adult world. When you're a teen, they're really just unemotional in regards to why not try this? Like, they don't feel as judged because they're kids in this setting. So I thought, well, we might as well get them all out there and they'll gain confidence and they have no problem trying a new drill or fun game or something like this without fear of looking weird or looking inept because they're kids. So they're, people see them as learning and approach them really kindly for the most part and are so happy that they're around. So it was kind of win-win. And the last thing you want is for someone to leave sport at 18 and then be afraid to go back to it until they're in their 30s. Like, then you just lost, you know, a solid 10, 15 years where that person could have been contributing. So a lot of these kids that actually start contributing 16, 17, 18, don't leave. So they actually continue to contribute more between 18 and 25, 26. And we have some coaching quite high levels of sport now in their late 20s, which didn't seem as likely before they had these opportunities.
Hmm. So it's obviously quite, you know, wide reaching, but if you were to try and summarize, what would you say is the overall objective of the Athleadership program?
Well, definitely it's coaching. So it started with everyone can coach. It doesn't matter what sport, at grassroots level, there's no reason that you can't be involved in coaching. Because what if your father who has three daughters that like soccer and rugby, but you happen to play hockey? So you don't know what you may want to coach at some point or where your interests change over time. So I think the resounding message was you all have to contribute back to sport through coaching at some point because somebody coached you. It's that cycle of somebody coached you along the way. And in fact, probably many people coached you along the way. So you need to honor the system and give back. So let's educate you on proper coaching theory, and then let's mentor you along the way for years. Like, we will mentor them for years as they learn and develop their skills at coaching, because everyone should be able to be involved at grassroots level in many different sports. And these kids do it, and they officiate with all kinds of different sports at the elementary level, usually under the age of 14. They're all over the place officiating, running tournaments, and it just helps them gain so much confidence that they're not afraid to try these things upon leaving high school.
I was going to say that must be quite empowering for them, because I guess traditionally there's this kind of bit where it's like, okay, as a teenager, you're the athlete and the coaches and the officials are all adults. But that kind of breaks down some of those barriers and actually maybe makes it a bit more of a human thing. Actually, they're human beings on both sides. And the fact that, okay, maybe you don't, maybe you've lost that interest in playing soccer, but actually you still enjoy being in that environment and want to coach or want to help manage a tournament or whatever. So it seems like there's a real empowering element to it.
Absolutely. That's exactly right. And it's funny, the more opportunities they have, some of them really take to the limelight. So we've had some pretty impressive partners in the last couple of years. So we were 9 days at the World Sledge Hockey Championships, Canada Golf event, the Hockey Canada Gala. And some of these kids now have joined executive committees. And we ran a dance marathon in our city for 6 years. It's more like an activities event for our local children's hospital. And we were the first school in our actual country to try this event. And now there's over 50 schools, high schools and universities doing this. So the kids that have helped run this event, so our entire executive is teenagers. They run everything from start to finish, and I nervously oversee it. And now they're doing it in their universities. Some of the kids have started in their universities at their respective schools. So it's like you said, giving them the opportunity to gain the confidence to actually try to apply these things in their own communities. So if you don't give them the chance, then how do they ever gain the confidence?
It's really interesting. It just made me think, like, obviously every generation kind of talks about the youth of today and, you know, that all delinquents, all this kind of stuff. But ultimately, I guess what this is kind of showing is, well, have you created an opportunity to do something otherwise? You know, if we just leave teenagers to their own devices on street corners and don't give them opportunities to contribute and don't actually say, hey, look, we think you've got something valuable to bring. Here's an opportunity to show you've got something valuable. Then it's a self-fulfilling prophecy, isn't it?
It absolutely is. So they want to belong. That's first and foremost. So people often ask me, we've started this in a few different cities in our province now. And one of the things I have to communicate is they want to belong. So we get the sweatshirts and the swag and we have a brand and you need to establish whatever that may be where you live. And they know they can't get cut. They have to do something abysmal for us not to support them and mentor them and help getting them back on track. So that is empowering to them, is that once they're in, because they have to get accepted, vetted, I guess, then we're going to help mentor them all along the way. And they really, really like that feeling of that I'm part of this and I'm part of this until I finish high school. And we actually track them until they don't want to be tracked anymore. So we have a group chats and all kinds of things where in one main one, we have over 400 of them. And now they're actively hiring each other. They're actively putting internships in and sharing scholarships and programs. So we're at, like, they're at universities and colleges all over the place. And when a student says, I would like to go to a sports science program in Ottawa, then I can connect them with kids who are there and who went through it. So they help them choose courses and where to live and all the sort of thing. So they want to be part of this mentorship. And they realize that when they join this program, that they sign a contract that they too will mentor. So it's a cycle of giving back, and it's a cycle of you got to find what your passion is in the program. So some kids, it's literally running tournaments. They love it. Other kids, it's coaching. Other kids, it's the sports science or the medical science. They go into medical school. Some are in MBA programs and they really want to be sports agents. And they go through the program and find their path. And we spend hundreds of hours trying to figure this out with them. And then guiding them through how to get the accreditations for their specific paths that they're working on.
So if I was a youngster that signed up for this program, what would that experience look like from the position of that youngster coming in? What sort of, as they're traveling through that program, what does it look like for one of the young athletes or one of the young, I guess, people signing up?
Well, they all pretty much have the same grade 11 and 12 experience. We try to keep that standard. So we want to dabble in everything and anything we can find to spark an interest. So that would be charity work versus sports science, strength and conditioning. We go to our university. We take trips all over the place from outdoor education to leadership initiatives. And then as they go through it, they keep logs. So it's weekly logs, really short, where they reflect on what we did that week. So as we read through the logs, we start to match what their interests are with their, say, academic performance. And then we're also looking at their emotional maturity and their social situations and their financial abilities. So some of them don't want to go to school far away. They want to live at home, and some of them really want to go far away. So we look at it through a holistic lens. So they definitely get a similar experience of content, and then we add on to it about a 30% difference per child based on their individual needs. And as they excel or not excel, they get more experiences. So, and they're all well aware of this. So the ironic part is you would think it would get overly competitive and parents would be jealous of, why does this child get to go to this event and that event? Because we don't send 60 kids to everything. But it actually reveals itself throughout the program. We don't have complaints over one student getting to go to some international conference in a different place over another, because they know how hard we work at with the kids on finding their own individual strengths in order to provide guidance and appropriate experiences where they're going to succeed. You don't want to send a student to present, like we presented at the Ontario Coaches Conference. I brought three students to actually do the presentation. I planned it with them and I'm like, okay, girls, this is your chance. Three of you, you're going to present this. And they did it. And I can't bring 60 kids to that. So the kids that excelled in that environment came, went, and blew it away. Like, they were amazing. So as I said, it's individualized, but it is partly a standard thing that we set up for everyone to have experiences so they can figure out what they're good at.
So talk us through some, I mean, you've already mentioned a few in terms of destinations that people have ended up, but talk us through some of the outcomes, both objective and subjective, that the program has achieved over the years it's been running.
So for example, we have students who actually gain Division I scholarships or Olympic team bids and berths and these sorts of things, as well as kids who go to Canadian University, house league programs, START programs. It's pretty wild to see all the differences where there's, I didn't expect this when it started, how many places that they would end up, like ski track school for developmental students, sports camps all over town. Now we've partnered, our people have come to us, like we're an employment center now. So we've partnered with at least 10 organizations in our city, including our city recreation department, our children's museums, strength and conditioning facilities, all kinds of places now come and ask, who do you have in mind for these jobs? And they come to our class and do job fairs and literally handpick them out of our school. And it took a long time to build the partnerships and a long time to build the trust in the community. But that's the point of reinforcing the brand, is that if you're going out in the community, you're representing yourself, your school, and the program and the concept. So you can't not be late. So we have kids going everywhere and they are not late and they do not miss. Imagine that with teenagers, right? So when they hire these teenagers, I find out if they're late for work on a Wednesday at a summer camp job. So it is like, no, you can't do this, because then they won't hire kids next year. That's how it works. So there's so many moving parts. And as I said, it didn't start off that way. It evolved to this in the last 3 or 4 years. It's just literally blown up to the point where we kind of got to scale back a little bit, because it's just, it really is a concept that the community has taken well to, and the kids have, and clearly the school, like they sign up for all these classes. And a lot of them take school in the summer to make sure they can fit all these courses in grade 11 and 12. So now you have teenagers volunteering hundreds of hours. You have them taking extra subjects in the summer, in summer school on occasion. And like you said, is this a self-fulfilling prophecy? Well, it kind of is. If you give them opportunities to shine, they want to. And it's just how, in what setting are they going to bring out what they like the most?
Now, it sounds like a phenomenal impact that, you know, you yourself, but the program as well, have made in terms of not just, you know, these individual lives that have gone on to bigger and better things, but the community as a whole. And it's interesting, whenever I speak to coaches, academics, that kind of stuff, there always seems to be one particular coach that stands out to them when they were somewhere between the age of 8 and 18 that was like, oh, you know, that person taught me this, or that I had a real positive experience. So I'm just thinking the number of positive experiences both those kids themselves must be having, but then the kids they're involved with. And it just seems exponential, that the potential to keep kids involved in sport in whatever capacity, like this, it just seems like a phenomenal program to have people involved in.
Absolutely. And as you mentioned, it does, it could be officiating, it could be coaching, it could be sport admin. We dabble in all of that. And the best part is they're learning to work with some adults who are not as effective communicators as they are. So that's a learning curve too. I said, just because you turn 18 doesn't mean you transfer into a well-spoken adult. So you are going to work with coaches who yell at you or are inappropriate, or they do shorten the bench and U9 soccer and don't play these kids all the time. So you're going to see all these things and be exposed to it. It's not your role to comment on it at the time. We're going to come back, you're going to reflect on it, and then how is that going to change you as a coach? So the reflection piece is huge. We're not there to judge adults. Like, we're there to watch, assess, and learn. Because if our community knew we were going all over town judging them all, they wouldn't want the kids there. So we don't use names when we write, and the students will say, I was working with Coach A and this is what I observed. And then we say, well, how did you think that matches up to your coaching philosophy? How did the child respond? Did that child look happy? Did it seem to help? It's always from a reflective lens on how someone can grow and improve. I'm not here to bash on adults who are trying their best with the skills that they have.
So I'm imagining now there's probably going to be, you know, people who are already thinking along these lines, or people who are listening and thinking, you know what, this is a fantastic thing to be doing, and wondering how they could start replicating this even on a small level in their local club or their local school. So what would be your advice to someone who's gone through it? Where would you where would you tell someone to get started?
So in school, we've I guess franchised in schools in different cities now. And if someone's interested in doing this in an HP in high school, you have to start with at least one class where the kids can all be together. Because if they don't have any connection to each other, they don't really want to go volunteer together. We do a lot of team building. We do a trip. We go camping and hiking and canoeing and kayaking to get to know each other. So they also realize when they sign up that you're going to be uncomfortable sometimes, but that's just part of life. And you're always going to be with people that are new to you, and you have to learn the skills to icebreak with that person as well. So there's definitely in school the setting where they would know each other, and on a club team, perhaps, so a rugby team, for example, you could start with U15, 16, 17. I don't know how the age groups are separated everywhere, but do it through team building. So we did that here with U18 high level hockey teams, and they really loved it. So we did try that with some club. And I would start with 3 to 4 concepts, like coaching curriculum concepts that you really want them to have hammered down. And I would include child development practices, like what is the child like under the age of 8? What is the child like between 8 and 12? What is the child like between 13 and 16? And you have to explain maturation and its effect on sport performance, because that is one of the greatest reasons kids leave sport, is their frustration of kids who go through the process of maturation early versus late and getting misguided guidance along the way on their talent. And so if you don't teach the future coaches that is going to be something they encounter, then how are they going to know? So you need to pick 3 to 4 key concepts. I usually use governing body coach curriculum and 3 to 4 community experiences. So to start small. So it could be a food drive over the holiday season. It could be assisting to run a tournament. Just keep 3 to 4 and coaching curriculum or human development curriculum concepts, like child development, because clearly we're coaching children, and 3 to 4 opportunities to get in the community. And then once you have that, then the next year you add 2 more. Because as I said, when I started this, that's all I had. I had 4 certifications and 4 activities the first year. And then each year I added more. So I wouldn't even want to explain the amount I have now, because that would discourage so many people from wanting to even try. And that's not the idea I want to get across.
Yeah, no, definitely not. I mean, it sounds like something that's got such potential to keep kids in sport, but open their eyes a bit to potential avenues and careers that they hadn't anticipated. And not only that, but give them experience. And like you said, kind of get a taster of things. Okay, where does your aptitude lie? What do you like? What don't you like? What did you find really difficult? What came natural to you? And I think that's something that not most teenagers get. Like I know when I was growing up, I was a bit different to most teenagers. And I was very much like, you know, when people didn't know what job they wanted to do, I was like, well, go and try something. If you don't like it, you know you don't like it. But a lot of people now, you know, there's that question when you're 16, 17 years old, what are you going to do when you leave school? And there's a kind of like rabbit in headlights moment. It's like, I've got no idea. I've only tried a handful of things. But by exposing kids to different, okay, did you like, you know, coaching in this avenue? Did you like coaching this age group? We're just giving them the opportunity to taste and see, really, aren't we?
Absolutely. And I wanted to touch on, as you mentioned, something that every program should have is we have a few mottos or words that they really have responded to. And one we always say is, you're not special. This doesn't go over well at first because at first they're like, yeah, my mom says I'm special. And I'm like, okay, well, to your family, you're special, but in here, you're not special. So you could be a Division I college athlete and you could be a house league player. You're not more special than this person sitting next to you. We're a humble group here, and we're servant leaders in this role. This isn't your club team. This isn't your track team or whatever it is you're on where you're excelling. This is a whole different environment where you get opportunities and experiences based on what you put in. So one thing I've noticed is the identity. We really push identity on the kids, that you are an AF leader. You're not a baller or, you know, a hockey player. You're an AF leader, and you're that for life. So you could have a career-ending injury at 17, 18, 19, 20. Who knows when something might happen to you? And we don't want to, I don't want kids to go through sport and face something horrible like that and feel their identity is completely stripped. And now what do I do? We really push them to adopt the term, I'm an athlete and I'm more than my sport. So I'm a coach and I'm a sport volunteer, and a lot of kids we encourage all kinds of certifications. So we have some getting their boating license and their fishing licenses. And these are high performing athletes. Some of them are so excited to get their boating license. It's just, yes, you're an athlete, but you're a leader more than that. So that carries with you through life, whereas your playing sport days might end. So I didn't explain that well enough, that they come in and they know that within the group, we all have the same value in this setting.
Mm. I think that is absolutely vital. Like, I mean, we think about it as like a, you know, kids dropping out of sport and losing their identity, but at some point in time, you know, you're going to either drop down a level or you're not going to be an elite, you know, even the person, you know, the Cristiano Ronaldo and the LeBron James, yeah. There's going to be a day when they are no longer a professional athlete. And right. I think we are doing athletes a bit of a misservice by not encouraging them to create an identity outside of sport. And I think this is something that is, it's kind of a bit counterintuitive sometimes as coaches to encourage people to be doing other things. Or talking right. about other things, because you're absolutely right. You know, when you get that injury and you're in a boot on the sideline for 6 months and you don't feel like a soccer player anymore, or you get that knee injury, you don't feel like a basketball player anymore, there is that grasp for what am I about anymore? Or, you know, if you are successful and you manage to have a, you know, an illustrious career, and the day you wake up and you're no longer a professional basketball player, and that question is, who am I? And we see this now playing out in professional athletes absolutely. Who have great careers and then retire and go, what is my life about now? And I think it's so important that we start that young to say, right, I know you love basketball, I know you love this, but what else do you love? You know, do you like, you know, learning languages or playing an instrument or hiking or, do, you know, what else? Because there's more to you, like you say, than just the sport.
Absolutely. And that is definitely part of the process of going through it, is that you have to have your fingers in all kinds of things. So how are you developing in your career? So is that through school or is that through apprenticeship, or how is that going to help you through life? Is that, some of the kids, as you know, are extremely driven in sport and have a one track mind, and that's all they can think about at the time. So in this role, it's like, okay, I support you there. However, I'm going to have you do these sorts of things along the way. And they don't know sometimes how good it is for them until later. Right. So in the moment, they're still teenagers, and some of them are still immature, obviously. And they most of the time want to join this program because they do know it's good for them. But they don't actually see the benefits of everything that has come their way until years later, because I'm constantly getting messages from kids in their mid-20s thanking, or this led to this, or I have this new experience because this happened. And that just comes with maturity. So
definitely. So where do you look to for resources in terms of improving, you know, the programs that you're running, or just to keep yourself up to date, that other people might benefit from? Is there any resources that spring to mind for you?
Well, I definitely follow the national governing bodies of different countries and see what their long-term athlete development plans, what they've been doing. I spend a lot of time on Twitter following people that I respect that are working in the field, either boots on the ground, applying good theory that I know is appropriate. A lot of professors I follow, people with PhDs, creating all the academic content that I learn from. I spend, I would say, about 2 hours a day reading evidence, gathered over 2,500 evidence-based articles to form my concepts to start. And obviously I find things age appropriate through the governing bodies. It's very easy to read, but I quite enjoy reading things from, say, England versus Ireland versus Australia versus USA, ADM, Canada, and comparing, contrasting how they're approaching sport and coming up with my own concepts myself. But yeah, it's a combination of university professors, governing body work, and accreditation curriculum. I'm constantly trying to take coach accreditation courses, as many as I can. I even recently took my mental health first aid 2 years ago because I felt that that was something I needed to be better at for these kids. So there's always things we can be improving on as well. So to take them and then model them to the kids. And then once I've taken it, I'll say, any of you want to take mental health first aid? And yes, we had 20 sign up. So 20 out of 60 is a lot. Mm-hmm. And so it constantly keeping up with evidence and what's appropriate curriculum is important. We don't want to just pitch things at them from bloggers trying to sell nutrition products. I'm very particular about who I will partner and carry content from.
So lastly, where can people find out more about you and about the Athleadership program, and where can they find you on social media channels?
Well, to be perfectly honest, I need to work on that. So I am on Twitter at Develop Athletes, and usually people contact me through Twitter, and then I start kind of an email chain and just send them things through email as they as they're hoping for, because I do this through the Ontario Ministry of Education and my local school board. And then when I work with a club team, so say that U18 hockey team, I'll just kind of go in and consult and say, this is what we're going to do. And I modify the program that fits what's appropriate for that team. And again, your governing body coach certifications are different than in Canada versus in the USA, which is the ADM. So it's pretty hard to create a content that doesn't match a particular country. So usually people just contact me and I'll fire back some resources for them, and they go from there. It's been nice that way. And no, I don't have a side business where I'm kind of doing all this. That would be something probably later. But right now I'm kind of happy to do it this way, and it's manageable. I probably get 5 requests a month and kind of just go off through there.
Well, thanks so much for your time today, because obviously you're a very busy human being, so I can appreciate that. And thanks for, the work that you're doing, because it's clear that you're having a massive impact with, the athletes of tomorrow, the coaches of tomorrow, and just, I guess, society of tomorrow. So thanks for what you're doing.
Yeah, and thanks for having me. And as you said, if anyone wants to contact me and just get some content put together, no problem. Just message me through Twitter. Thanks so much for having me, Rob. How do you know, man?